of a new era. Even more of what you asked for from your talk radio station.
It's Glenn Beck.
The Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show.
New shows and more news.
Now on North Central Florida's talk leader, 97.3.
The Sky.
Good morning and welcome and happy hump day, Trump Day, my friends. Hour number three begins. It's 8:07. Your time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. One of your top stories we haven't really dug into, but it's Tulsi Gabbard joining the Republican Party. Way to go. Kamala Harris and some of her staffers very concerned in leaking the fact they think they might lose North Carolina and Michigan. We'll dig up more on that. But right now, we have a special guest in the studio. She's a candidate for District 3, Alachua County Commission, Jen Garrett. Good morning, Jen, and welcome.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
It is our pleasure. I know you got something really big you want to blow the lid off. I want to get to that, but real quick, UF grad, 20 years in the community, 3 kids, and one of the crazy things you say is you're about improving roads and infrastructure.
That's right. I used to be a subcontractor for FDOT, and we're losing out on millions of dollars of federal funding because our county just does not cooperate well with FDOT, and we can fix that problem.
I remember that Main Street going from 4 lanes to 3 would take it off the state list because you have to have 4 lanes to, you know, follow that code or whatever, and literally millions. And then they dug it up and they found other stuff in there. Then they begged the county to help bail them out and help pay for it. So, yeah, taxpayers, we all paid for misjudgment, I guess I would call it, beginning in the city and then followed through with by the county. You also mentioned jobs. What would you do to get good jobs, additional good jobs in Alachua County?
So, yes, that's a huge part of my plan. And the whole way that I've run my campaign is talking with folks, talking with successful business owners in our community, people that have had startups, everything from folks that own restaurants all the way up to some of our bigger corporations. And the biggest thing that we have to do is start listening to our business community, stop antagonizing them, making sure that we have policies where we are encouraging people to start businesses here, encouraging people to move businesses here, and encouraging them to employ our residents.
Well, you know, we have some of the higher tax rates in the state, and I know we have a lot of regulations and requirements for businesses, so you would work to try to alleviate some of that?
That is correct. We do have some of the highest tax rates. That's something I wanted to get into this morning. There's something that they've signed on to that will make our taxes significantly more than they already are. And that's something I hear every day from people is, why are our taxes so high and our roads so bad?
I've always said, you know, when you come into the county, the sign right there says, where high taxes meet crumbling roads.
That's right.
And of course, that irritates some of the people that have made those decisions, but tough, too bad, because it is a fact. Tell me about this 2050 plan and help me with the verbiage and describe what it is.
Right. So just to give some background, last year, our Alachua County Commission met with our own Alachua County Environmental Protection Department. That is unusual that our county has its own EPA of sorts. Usually that's just a state office. So they met about something, the 2050 Climate Change Initiative, an international initiative to reduce carbon emissions. And as part of that plan, they're going along with the idea being promoted internationally that 50% of the land be placed in conservation. So our commissioners voted unanimously to support that effort. And they so by the year 2050, 50% of our land would be placed in conservation at a cost of $1 billion. That's in 2023 dollars. So, of course, it will be more than that.
I'm all about conservation. I'm all about, we've talked, in fact, I believe we're going to have him on later, the Florida Ag Commissioner, Wilton Simpson. He talks about the wildlife corridor, talks about the watershed areas where we need to regenerate the aquifers. I'm for all that, but I'm also for agricultural use as well. And I'm going to ask you the big question, which is, when they call it conservation, does that mean those lands could be used for farming and ag?
So they're saying yes, but I kind of bring up this whole 2050 plan to let people know that's the goal. Our county commission is all on board of their goal is conservation. Now, this summer, they announced a new Agriculture Conservation Plan. I went to this meeting along with some of my friends that are in ag. And what I want to encourage farmers to do is to look really closely at those documents if they're considering this plan. And maybe it will be a good plan for you where they buy a conservation easement from you, paying you for your land, albeit a reduced cost of what your land is actually worth, so that you can keep farming. But when I ask specifically about, so does that give the county the right to control the amount of irrigation and fertilizer on your farm, they said, well, it just kind of depends on the contract. So that's important, because if farmers can't control how much to irrigate and how much fertilizer to put on, they can't farm in our soils. That makes it extremely difficult. And the last thing I want to see is folks trying to keep their farms in the family and then our county using this document as a way to control irrigation.
Now, are you familiar with the state plan, which is something they have been doing ongoing, which is the rural and family farms thing? That's what they do. They basically buy the rights to the farmer's land. The farmer continues to farm it and can do whatever they want with it as long as it's a farm. They can sell it if they want. But it protects it from ever being anything other than a farm. And the commissioner's talked about that. He's very proud of that program. Is this just an extension of this, or is it different?
So when we were in that meeting, I think it's important to note that they never referenced that state plan that already exists. So I have to wonder, why? Why wouldn't folks just use the state plan? And so, and why would they use this local plan instead? What is the motivation for us having the county version of that? So I really just want to make sure, and again, this plan might work for some farmers in our community, and I don't want, you know, to completely discourage everyone from looking into it, but I want everyone to look into it closely, especially because by spending $1 billion plus and taking 50% of land away from private ownership, I have to believe that's going to really bump up the taxes for everyone in our county, because all I ever hear is folks saying, well, our taxes are so high because of UF. So what's going to happen when we take this much more land off the tax rolls?
Yeah, and that's not the only reason. They use UF. That's an easy escape. Mm-hmm. But that's not the whole story. It is a portion of it. Now, this DEP, I have been told not good stories about them in the past, where they've actually gone to landowners that say have 5 or 10 acres, and they say, oh, you need to commit, you know, a certain amount of this to be wetlands, to be not developed, or basically getting them to sign over the rights of their property. I want to say this about 10 years ago. Are you familiar with that at all?
Yes, and that is the exact reason why I went digging for this information, is person after person kept telling me that they felt like they had been kind of taken advantage of or forced into this kind of program. So I wanted to dig a little bit deeper, and that's when I found this plan, and then subsequently went to the meetings about it.
Well, yeah, look, living in this community that I have for many years until I moved to Clay County recently, I would believe anything that where they would gain more power and control over people's lives and over more land as much as they possibly could. They've been setting aside land under another conservation tax, which is not a terrible idea, but then they don't want people to be able to use it at all, even for walkabout park space in many cases. And I don't know. I just think that is wrong. So Jen Garrett, thank you for being with us. She's a candidate for District 3, Alachua County Commission. What's the best way for people to find out more about you, get in touch, support the campaign?
You can go to my website, jengarrettcampaign.com, or see me on the socials on Facebook or Instagram.
Two R's, two T's.
That's
and
right.
Two N's.
And two N's.
Two N's, two R's, two T's.
I'm seeing a pattern here, Bob.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Jen Garrett, thank you so much. We wish you the best. Alachua County could sure use a voice of logic and reason, so we do wish you the best.
Thanks so much.
All righty. It is 8:16. We've got plenty more to talk about as well on the Bob Rose Show, including, well, it's Chris Matthews, so do I need to say something stupid?
Is this like shivering again?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it is. That and more on the way. News Talk 97.3 The Sky. Good morning and welcome. It is 8:21. Your time check. brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. Happy Hump Day, Trump Day. Early voting in session in 10 minutes. Get out there early voting and get it done. Greg and I got our little stickers.
Yep.
Doing our civic duty as good Americans.
Absolutely.
Get out there and do it. Remind friends, relatives, like-minded people, got to do it. Polls are looking good. They're leaning favorably toward Trump. Still way too, you know, margin of error stuff, plus their polls to begin with. I want a landslide, quite frankly.
Yeah,
and I think that way he will have a clear mandate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'll make the whole, just the whole transition, everything else, smoother than it normally would, saying that, define smooth.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be great no matter what. These people on the left are desperate.
They're not going to want to let go.
No. By the way, one of the top stories, one dead, 49 sick in E. coli outbreak linked to McDonald's Quarter Pounders. This according to the CDC and ABC News. They've traced it. They believe the ingredients to the Quarter Pounder, and it could be the beef patty. It could be the onions that they put. Those are fresh, like sliced onions, not the the dried onions that they put on the burgers, the regular hamburgers.
Mm-hmm.
Which I actually really like. I didn't think I'd be like a dehydrated onion fan, but I am.
It's actually kind of tasty in a weird way.
It is.
Nothing in there good for us, but they're tasty anyway.
No, don't say that. Don't say that. You know what's really good for you from McDonald's?
What's that?
The house. The Ronald McDonald house.
See what you did there? Now, that's an amazing thing.
And that leads into, what are you doing this weekend?
Oktoberfest.
Oktoberfest at Audi of Gainesville on Main Street. That's where we're the official radio sponsor of the Ronald McDonald House.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And we believe in that cause, and they do great work. Extremely sick children come from all over. This gives the their families a place to stay. Food, meals provided. A lot of volunteers come and make it all work very, very well. So we're proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
And a big fundraiser is Oktoberfest.
Yep.
And if you want to see what an authentic Oktoberfest is supposed to be like, without having to fly to Munich, this will probably be one of your best opportunities because the band actually is flown in from Munich. They do use a real German-style beer recipe that is done locally, so it's super good and super fresh. And they have the brats, and not everybody does brats, which I'll never understand, but anyway, teach his own. They have the roasted chickens, which Greg's already said, save me too.
They're amazing.
And so you got the band playing. You got the fun. Wear your lederhosen if you want to, and don't if you don't. But wear something.
Yes, please do. Even a bigger tent. They've expanded it this year, and it all starts at 10 o'clock Saturday morning.
10 a.m. Saturday morning, Oktoberfest, Audi of Gainesville. All funds raised go to the Ronald McDonald House. Awesome. By the way, they've isolated what they believe this to mostly two states, the E. coli in Colorado and Nebraska. They have had one death. Most people, 5 to 7 days, they're over it. You'll get some upset stomach, etc. But then some people develop a kidney-type disorder, and that's what, that's called HUS. And that sometimes requires hospitalization, and that sometimes can actually take your life. So they've taken it off everywhere where it could be a problem. So you couldn't even order it if you wanted to.
Not that you'd want to.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, very interesting guest that we just had on, Jen Garrett. And I don't believe she has run for any office before, I'm guessing here, but I looked at her bio. But she's running for Alachua County Commissioner District 3. And I just thought she brought up several really good things, but this 2050 plan, she called it like an international type thing that Alachua County is buying into. And that's probably what, like the UN, like they did, like they attempted to do before. These are not good things. These are like what communist Marxists and control freaks want to do. They want more control. They want to tell you how to live. That has been the deserved reputation for Alachua County government. That doesn't mean there hasn't been some good people who have served on the commission, because there has been. But very, very difficult to where you're going to get a plurality of more conservative-minded, you know, real Americans. That can change. And that can change in this election cycle. Republicans, you need to go out and vote. If you vote in force, you can make a difference, even in Alachua County, even in the city of Gainesville. But you got to do it. All right. And if you do that and you do it consistently, we can change some things about the government in Alachua County, having some of the highest property taxes in the state of Florida.
I can vouch for that.
Yet still having terrible roads and terrible condition. I mean, there's just no excuse. When you think about taxing property taxes, schools and infrastructure, public safety.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty in the budget.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Just all how it is prioritized.
Well, do the words pet projects mean anything to you?
There you go.
Just saying.
All right. So anyway, check that out. It's Jen Garrett, two N's, two R's, two T's.
Oh, I think that's an easy way to remember it.
Yeah. So we got that going on. It's just been busy.
Well, you know, between hurricanes and political season, it's a busy time. And events.
Don't you feel bad for Kamala? Of the many stories this morning, which most of them are not good for her. In fact, all of them are not good.
Well, good. I don't feel sorry for her.
Struggling with young voters in Arizona.
My heart bleeds.
You feel really bad, don't you?
No. Words can't describe.
But if you did, you'd be able to get over it by the time the break's over.
Quickly, yes.
Hey, the reason I brought up Jen Garrett and her campaign, and this to do with this 2050 plan, is because Florida Ag Commissioner Wilton Simpson is going to be on the show next on 97.3 The Sky.
Between now and Election Day.
We are running as the underdog.
We want to take back our country.
Hear about it first.
2024, America's greatest victory.
Talk about it now.
Can't get enough news.
The Sky gets it right.
Here's Talk 97.3, The Sky.
Good morning and welcome. It is 8:35. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. And on the line, we've got Florida Ag Commissioner Wilton Simpson. Good morning, Commissioner. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great, Bob.
Hey, we just talked to a fine young woman, Jen Garrett, who's running for Alachua County Commissioner, and she brought up this concept, this 2050 plan, which apparently it's an international type thing. I think it's connected to the UN, but our concern is how it will be applied in Alachua County, and some of the stuff sounded a lot like the program that you're a part of, that family, Saving the Family Farms, et cetera. Have you had a chance to look at this? Have you heard about this at all?
No, not specifically the way they're doing it, Bob, but I suspect it's probably substantially different than what we do. When we do rural and family lands program, which is where we go in and buy the development rights from farmers, those farmers still own their land. They still farm their land. They have to use what we call best management practices, which we've been doing for more than 30 years now in the state of Florida, and which dictates, obviously, a lot of processes. So they use less water, less nutrients and fertilizers and things of that nature. So we're very proud of the rural and family lands. What you see in a lot of these programs, and it wouldn't surprise me in Alachua County, that they're just trying to take farmland out of production. And you know, and that's the worst thing we can do in this state. First of all, agriculture is the number two driver of the economy here in the state of Florida. 2.5 million people today are going to work here in agriculture, and we're a major economic driver. But let's be even more serious. You know, you need a farmer three times a day. Everybody has to eat.
Yep.
We are already a net importer of food into this country. And the more of this good farming land that you take out of production, the less secure we are here. You know, food security is national security.
We just got walloped by, a couple of big storms, major hurricanes. What has that done to ag in the state of Florida, if you can kind of give us an early assessment?
Yeah, sure. No, I was in Cedar Key earlier in the week. And, you know, the clam industry has been hit very hard. Three major hurricanes in 13 months. We are trying to work with them to help them recover that area. We are the second leading producers of clams in the country, in the state of Florida, behind Virginia. And so it's a very big part of that local economy there, but it's a big part of the state economy. So that they've been hit very hard. We're working with them today obviously cattle's been hit hard all over the state with trees down and trees on fences. And, you know, the ideal of having to make sure that your cattle are contained and cared for has become a little more difficult, but cattlemen are very resilient. They've done a very good job in recovering. We've clearly assisted in these. And then the strawberry industry here in Plant City, Florida, we visited them with Rick Scott earlier in the week, or last week. I lose track of time these days, but last week. And, you know, they had all their beds down and plastic down, and they probably lost $30 to $50 million of work in Hurricane Milton that come across there. So they are recovering. It's going to cost them, most of them, twice, basically, to prep the land to get ready. So this is probably not going to be a good economic year for them. But we should have a major crop of fresh from Florida strawberries this year. And we're proud of the resilient farmers there in Plant City. Clearly, we work with them through the storms with generators and dumpsters and things of that nature, help them get back on their feet as an industry. And that's what we're doing, Bob. We as a Department of Agriculture are reacting in real time to a farmer's needs, getting them back on their feet. We need these farmers. We don't need it just because it's the economic driver of this state. We need it because we need to eat every day. We need to have food security. And we have too many insecure people today. And I'll tell you, this plant in Alachua County, if it takes more production land out of production, we're going to become more food insecure. So the very people that are pushing these policies of taking agriculture out of production are the same people that would try to rail on everybody for us being so food insecure. Who do they think's making that happen? You know, they need to look in the mirror.
Well, and what really bothers me is I think they're going to use deceptive practices to try to push this through. And, you know, the farmers don't necessarily see an issue with it. And then they're going to turn the screws on them. That's the feeling that I have, because if they're plain, if everything is in plain, transparent language, I don't think that a lot of people would accept it. So that's my concern, using deception, and people get fooled and don't get what they voted for or supported. Let me ask you this. How is the citrus crop looking this year?
Well, the citrus crop we thought had bottomed last year at about 15 million boxes of oranges. And just to put that in perspective, 25 years ago, we produced 250 million boxes. So it's down about 90% because of greening and canker and hurricanes.
Yeah.
And we believe that this year we were going to probably be back over 20 million boxes because of the work that we've been doing and the replanting. Now we believe we'll be closer, and this is preliminary, but we believe it'll be back down to about 15 million boxes again this year. I'm actually in Dundee this morning with the citrus growers here, and I'm about to get an updated report. But from the wind and the rains and the flooding, you know, we've lost a substantial amount of this year's crop again. And, you know, we can't keep saying these things in infinitum. But I know this year, and as in previous years, we are spending $50, $60 million a year to help replant, make sure we get our processing plant, keep them running. And so we've got the formation of a recovery. We just need the good man upstairs to help us a little bit with these hurricanes. And I think because we're finding, you know, we've got a rootstock. By the way, University of Florida and IFAS is outstanding. Partners, and they're doing a tremendous job, you know, developing rootstocks and things of that nature that are helping us fight greening and stuff in the citrus industry. We could not do the things we do here in the state of Florida without IFAS and the University of Florida. We're very proud of Dr. Engel and his team there, and so I needed to mention them because they're a big part of all of this.
Oh, but yeah.
It will recover, and we're hoping in the coming years we'll start getting some serious recovery.
What is the role, if any, and your interaction with, as the Florida Ag Commissioner, with FEMA after these, you know, major storms roll through and all the damage? How does that work?
Well, we are completely separate of FEMA, but we do share information back and forth with the federal agencies. And what Rick Scott, Speaker Johnson was just in your area just a few weeks ago. I was with him. Marco Rubio, Rick Scott, all of them, we're talking about doing block grants to the state of Florida through my department, through the Department of Agriculture, so that we can get these dollars in the hands of farmers. We have a good relationship with them, but they are failing miserably. And it's not the people that work for USDA or FSA. They're good people. They do not have the resources, or they do not have the money or the resources or the personnel to be able to get these dollars to our farmers. And we have, our farmers have not been taken care of because they, we haven't passed the dollars or the farm bill in now 6 years. I think it's going on the seventh year. So we're hopeful that in December this year, after the election, that they will do the farm bill and update a program to where we can block grant dollars to these farmers that are in need. And by the way, Bob, and this is the saddest part, the larger farmers generally can hold out for a few years to receive their federal aid. It's the small farmers who get putting out of business because they're slow walking the aid or they're not getting it to us. And there's no excuse for that. The federal government needs to do their job, and they need to bring the resources here that these farmers are deserving of and make this happen. And they just don't. But we're about $2.5 billion and $3 billion short right now since Hurricane Ian of federal programs that are supposed to assist our farmers to get back on their feet. And, you know, they're just inept. And again, it's not the people, it's the programs.
Right. It just seems interesting that FEMA dollars and resources could go very, very quickly. They find money for illegals under this Biden-Harris administration, but can't find it for the people that are here producing food and the people that lost homes. It's kind of hard for us to, kind of figure that out.
Well, it's not hard to figure out. It's just we don't like what we have figured out, right?
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. When it's important to them, have an open border, lack of security, peaceful protests burning down cities all over the place, it's very convenient for them to let those things happen. When it comes time to support hardworking Americans with the American dream, now they're telling us, we don't need the American dream anymore. We have to downsize our American dream. Well, I'm an American, and I've lived here 58 years, and I want my family to grow up with the American dream that I grew up with, not some stunted version of it that the Harris administration now is pushing out there, and it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's not as though they're going to downsize their lives. So.
No, of course not. No. That's right.
That's okay. It's just another form of fertilizer. Florida Ag Commissioner Wilton Simpson, that's why we love you, my friend, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
That sounds good.
All right, take care. Thank you. Yeah, he's you might say he's a little busy, so we appreciate working us in and helping to explain some of the stuff that is going on.
Yeah.
And unacceptable. Another reason why you need to get out there. Early voting is going on right now. Got to do it. It is 8:45, and you're listening to 97.3 The Sky. Look for the Bob Rose podcast wherever you get your podcast, and just click on subscribe, and you'll have us whenever you want us. 97.3 The Sky. Busy. We all are. Don't make excuses. Early voting is going on. Come on, folks. Got to do it. I'm going to keep going on and on.
Yes, you are. Yes.
Got to do
but
it.
But you have to. Because people, if you don't, it's like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to. And then we don't. But you and I both have voted already.
So much hinging on it. Look, we're not talking about the 1960s, the 70s, or even the 80s when we talk about the difference between Republicans and Democrats. And this is not to go and say that, Republicans, they're all perfect and they're right on everything. I'm not saying that. But the Democrat Party is being pushed further and further to the left. It's being run by Marxists. They absolutely cannot be trusted at every turn. You can see how they lose trust, not in their party. We lose trust in institutions because there's people that have an agenda to promote, to push and do the will of the party who shouldn't. Like, I don't know, FBI agents, maybe members of the CIA pushing a political agenda. That's not what we had in the past, or it certainly was limited so that we never really were aware of it. But we're pretty aware of it now, are we not? I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. All right. It is 8:52. Interesting thing. Kamala Harris struggling with young voters in the swing state of Arizona going into Election Day. Young voters turned out in record numbers for Joe Biden in Arizona back in 2020. Kamala seems to be having trouble repeating his performance, and Democrat strategists fear former President Trump's efforts to capture that voting bloc have paid off, especially with Latinos. Well, I told you I saw a poll where I think nationwide, Trump is within 5 points of Harris when it comes to Latino voters. That's huge. There was a 30-point deficit between him and Biden. 30 points, now 5. Tell me that that isn't big. And the young voter thing can be explained in a couple of different ways, one of which is you're 4 years older now than you were when Biden was running.
Right.
So if you were 15, 14, then
okay,
you could vote. But now you can. If you were 14 when Biden was running, it's 18, right? Yeah. So think about it. And what's happening, what we're seeing is, and I don't know how well-defined the trend is, but I've read a couple of pieces on it here and there. And the brand new, the youngest folks that are coming up are tending to be more conservative than what we have seen over several generations. Yes, more conservative. I know. It is almost, you'd feel like, wow. I mean, with all the brainwashing, this and that is taking place. Well, I think this is almost a backlash, if you will, to it. And that some young people are actually engaging and utilizing, you know, things like, well, what we call common sense, but, you know, what is really logic. And so I'm not saying that, you know, the tide has turned completely, but it would show that there's reason for hope in that upcoming generation. And then the one that's in between that supported Biden, as they age and begin to see their paychecks getting ripped to shreds by taxation, right? And they see that, hey, man, we were really close to getting ready to buy a house, and then all of a sudden, you know, the interest rates went through the roof, and now it pushed us out of the market. So we're waiting and waiting. They've been waiting. And those people also might be like, you know what? Yeah, maybe giving Trump a chance, even if we don't like him, his personality. Yeah, he really is a leader, though, and he really does understand the economy. He understands trade practices, and he understands the idea of having a manufacturing base and how important all these things are. And basically, it boils down to, you know, it's interesting that a billionaire has a much better grasp and an understanding of the American dream than somebody like a Kamala Harris, who tries to claim that, oh, she grew up in a middle-class home. No. Which leads me to this article. Kamala Harris was admitted to law school through the University of California, San Francisco's Legal Education Opportunity Program. Now, who's that designed for? Students with educational disadvantage. Did she have that? No.
No.
Economic hardship? No.
No.
Any kind of disability? No. So isn't that interesting?
It is. How'd she get in using that program?
Well, there was a 2018 article in the University of California Law San Francisco magazine. They offer admissions to approximately 50 high-achieving students each year, up to 20% of the class, who have experienced major life hurdles, such as the things I talked about, economic hardship, educational disadvantage, stuff like that. The majority are students of color. So isn't that interesting that this is designed for really for minorities that have had a struggle, an uphill battle, maybe parents that weren't well educated? That's not the case with her. See, not the case at all. But she took advantage of it anyway and maybe pushed somebody out of that program who really should have gotten that spot. 9 o'clock stretch is next. Hang on.